You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Stars Matter, a recruiting podcast from The Athletic. I'm Mitch Light, joined by Ari Wasserman. Ari, we've got a guest, the busiest man at The Athletic this week, Max Olson, monitoring the transfer portal as we speak, literally. How are you doing, Max?
I'm all right. I'm all right. We've made it this far in the week. We made it to Wednesday. Didn't know if we would, but we did.
Are you like
good to see your beautiful faces.
The number one guest on everybody's show this week, not just podcasts. Like, are you going on... on radio shows, I mean,
I am doing James Corden show tonight. That is true. Yeah.
Well, it's good to see your perfect face, Max. And we had a portal conversation earlier in the week on Andy Staples' show, but
it's running back. Same combo.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big week. But let's just try to get more philosophical with it. I think more so than just like actual people. I just like want to know.
Let me butt in for a second here, Ari. This is a recruiting podcast. We will talk recruiting. There's been some movement on the coaching carousel. There's a big one somewhere out west. We have to get to, and that will be part of our portal talk too. But we definitely have some recruiting to hit on. But we do have Max, and Max is going to stay with us the whole show, not just the portal talk. So go ahead, Ari.
It is interesting. It's just like I didn't even in my mind there separate the two things as different. Like portal and recruiting. Like, I don't know, like, if that's like where we're at right now, but Max, are you surprised by how active it was or how many people were in it? Or was this what you were anticipating?
Yeah, I think that the Monday, I think we ended up at over 450 scholarship FBS players going to the portal all in one day. And definitely record. If you look at, you expand that to, you know, all players, you know, FBS, FCS, D2, I mean, certainly an all-time record in terms of one day going in the portal. It's what I expected just in terms of the way that they changed the rule. You know, this is why in some ways this is why they wanted to do the portal windows, to try to confine this stuff to December for the most part, and to give people clarity before signing day and in terms of who's leaving and what holes you have and stuff like that. So, and you had a lot of, I think we had, I was keeping track in November, probably had about 200 players announce they are going to go in the portal on December 5th. And so you kind of knew like that was like the starting point for Monday, at least, of like those guys are going to pop up. And then, yeah, to end up at 450. It's crazy, right? It's crazy. I mean, I think that if you go by 85 man scholarships, it's like 4% of all college football players going in the portal in one day.
I don't know about you. I'm sure. And Mitch, you tell me, but I felt kind of overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to keep track of who's...
Well, I'll tell you what was overwhelming is we have our live blog, our transfer blog, and Daniel Shirley, one of my colleagues, another editor, sort of like the live blog editor, and he's the one responsible for... He had to, like, go... He had a dentist appointment, so I had to monitor the blog for, like, an hour, and I was trying to do other work, and I was like, Max, will you stop posting stuff in the live blog channel? Because I could not get anything else done. It was literally for midday. It was nonstop. Well,
and I was like really trying to just like focus on like, you know, guys that are like starters, people like that. Like, I was trying to make it like people that, you know, fan bases may have heard of and stuff like that. Right. But it's like, it's hard to be discerning and only say, here's the 20 out of 450 that you should know. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so many people popping up and it's funny too, though, on my side of it, like if you look at the actual portal, it'll list their first and last name, their school, if they're grad transfer or not. That's it. Like it doesn't link to their 24/7 page or anything. So you have to kind of go very quickly Google a lot of guys you haven't heard of just to say like, is this guy a starter? Is he a freshman? You know, what's the situation here?
I've got an unanswerable question that I want both of you guys to take a stab at. So if we say, you know, obviously Georgia hasn't had any. I know there's some schools have only had a few. But if we're saying the average school to this point's probably seen about 7 to 10 guys in the portal, what percent are those that the fan base should be like worried about? Like, I still think it's a pretty small percentage that maybe like two out of every seven or even less than that, like a starter that they really wanted back. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of the guys are looking for top places to play or they're getting run off or something. It's not like, to me, while there's tons of guys out there, it's not like all these teams are losing all these key starters yet.
That I agree with you on that. And anyone that left that people didn't want to lose, then you immediately hear like, oh, he's getting a bag. That's why, right? Yeah. Like that's the, so what's the bag percentage out of 450 guys? I don't know that it's a big number there, right? Like I think it's you're right. I think the way that we've modified the rules this year is encouraging that you know you're going to go a lot of the players that are going in the portal are guys that didn't play enough for their liking this season, guys that maybe they've had injuries or they're just their backups, they're buried, they're getting recruited over all that. So that is a lot of portal entries. And, you know, I think that's one thing that we kind of put together when you're tracking it in this last cycle. The reality is more of these guys find homes than people think. Obviously, like not all these guys just end up moving in with their parents and going home and giving up on life. But the reality is when you go in the portal, this last cycle, the ones that did find a home, 65% of them went down a level, whether it's down to G5 or FCS or D2 or JCs. So that is,
that's a good number. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where, so 2/3 of them are moving down. And, you know, like when you see there's a lot of like group of five players, for example, like all conference guys that have gone in the last week that getting a lot of offers right away. Last year, about 900 group of five players went in the portal. Scholarship players, only 100 of them landed with a Power 5 school. So you're still kind of fighting over a limited number of spots, even if there's a lot of guys out there.
So of the 450, 500 or so players in the portal, how many are from A&M? I was just trying to set you up for that joke.
I like that. I can tell you the answer to that.
Let's see. And how many won't end up at USC?
14, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is 18.
18. Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's like a bad thing or a good purge. Like which, like,
what would you, okay. So let's think about this. I know you like to think about things sometimes are in terms of like, if you were running a dynasty on NCAA.
Yes. Right?
I mean, I was guilty of this shit every year.
That's how I run
everything
in my head.
I was guilty of this shit all the time where you go sign a recruiting class and then at the end of the offseason, they say cut 15 players. That's what I would always do. Right. I would sign 25 and cut however many I got to cut. I think that's kind of what's going on here a little bit. It's starting to happen a little bit in college football where you got to get the numbers right. So, and you want, but you still want to take full classes every year. So you have these casualties at the end of the season or at the end of the spring to try to get back to 85.
I'll say one thing real quick, Ari, that the NCAA got right. And usually they're too reactive to stuff like this. Is the increasing or getting rid of the 25 initial counter. If they still had 25, it would be a nightmare for these schools. You'd have so many schools under the 86 limit.
Yeah.
And then you'd have so many fewer kids getting scholarships. I mean, it would just be a nightmare on both ends.
Go ahead, Ari. We were just talking about this the other day, Mitch, because Deion Sanders at Colorado, a lot of the kids who were committed to Colorado before he arrived are all of a sudden just finding their way into new classes or no longer committed. Do you think that with the portal now that the way that we view as consumers of the sport, kids being cut is changing?
Yes, me or Mitch?
Either one. I was talking to you.
I'll go first. Max is our special guest. I'll go. I don't think so. I mean, each case is different. The reason I brought up the Colorado thing to you, Ari, is a potential story, which is that Rick George, our athletic director, evidently had told all of the kids throughout the process, you know, we're making a coaching move. Your scholarship is going to be honored. And then they bring in Deion Sanders and the rules have changed literally for the entire university. And now seven kids no longer have scholarships. Now, one of the kids just committed to Vanderbilt. There's still 2.5-3 weeks to go. Most of these kids can find a new home. But that's why it raised a red flag to me. Like, because I know that happens all the time. New coach comes in. Hey, you hired me to turn this thing around quickly. I got to be able to make these difficult decisions. Right. So I think it's just sort of how you view the sport. It's going to be your opinion.
I do think that the perception or backlash or however you want to put it, I think it has changed over the last like 5 years. I think probably 5 years ago, I would be in the like camp of people being like, you can't just drop commits. You can't just push guys into the portal. Like, that's wrong. You made a 4-year commitment to them. You know, that just doesn't seem fair to me and stuff like that. And I mean, and I'm not saying that that's false or anything like that. Obviously, like, that's like, you have to be like sympathetic to these kids and their families who have this dream and are kind of having the rug pulled out from under them, right? But like, you talk to coaches and stuff, and it seems like there's kind of been this shift over the last few years where it's like, well, you know, there's not loyalty on either sides. You know what I mean? Where coaches bail every year, and now kids can bail every year, you know? And so it's kind of like everybody's just like kind of making business decisions now, and you wish that it weren't this way, obviously. But, you know, like the Deion thing, I think, is a great like lightning rod, like example of it, where he's telling them the truth about how it's going to be. And, you know, there's still certainly a segment of people who hear that and are like wincing and like, that's horrible. How could you treat him that way? But then there's other people who would be like, you know what, if you're a Colorado fan, you're thinking like, they've been losing, you know, you're coming in here to set a culture and a standard, and whoever can't meet that's going to go, you know, that's just how it is. And, you know, you're kind of treating them like adults and being real with them now. Maybe coaches can, I don't know. Like, does that strike you guys as wrong?
Or do you think that seems like it is what it is? What you don't want is to force, and let's take Deion out of this, but to force the new coach to sign kids he doesn't think can play there.
Sure.
That's a disservice to him and a disservice to the kids. And he has preconceived notion. Obviously, if the kid's awesome, he's going to play. But if he's a borderline kid, he's going to go with one of the kids he recruited, and that kid's going to be in the portal the next year anyway.
What I thought was interesting was that Colorado was a certain place that had a certain mantra that Mitch was mentioning. And somewhere along the last week or two, they decided that they wanted to be committed to winning in football, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in order to win in football, you have to operate a certain way. And the thing that's unique about it is that with Deion, we get to watch everything. Right. Like, we would assume right. all this stuff that would happen. But the fact that we got to watch him say it, it's just like, yeah, that's not the way Colorado would have done it a few weeks ago. And there's a reason why Colorado was one of the worst teams in their conference.
Well, also, so, like, those coaches can mess those decisions up, too. Like, you guys remember, Mitch, you know, when Pruitt gets to Tennessee, they drop Michael Penix, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, you know, there can be some backfires on those decisions, too, where you just show up and feel like, I got to get my guys and whatever. I just think that the way this is all going now, it seems like people are just more okay with this becoming more transactional. I mean, I'm sure not every parent and every kid and every coach feels that way, but that is kind of the way this all is trending.
Yeah, I just and I totally agree with you, because I'm with you, Max. My attitudes have changed on this stuff. I just hope that the kids have high school coaches, even if their parents don't know, that can help them through this process. Because, you know, we're in December. You find out kids are on break soon. They're not at school. Like, just they need the right people in there. It's okay. You've got 2 weeks. You know what? You can wait until February to sign, that they don't make a rash decision or anything like that. Because, you know, like, we know a lot about this process. We don't have kids being recruited, but like, imagine this, you're just new to the process, you're a parent, you're a single parent or whatever, and your kid finds out he doesn't have a scholarship. Like, so I just hope that
100%. Yeah. If like, especially the way things are set up now, like, if you get dropped from a class on December 1st, these coaches, their whole focus is on transfers right now. I mean, for the most part, and doing in-homes with their committed guys and stuff. So it's like, this would be, and especially once we get past this early signing period, like, if you get dropped, like, it is hard to go find a bunch of offers and go take visits and go make a commitment by early signing period. Like, you are in a really tough spot with the way this is set up now. And the numbers are obviously not in the favor of the high school kids right now.
So the stat that you mentioned earlier about most of the players transferring down a level, do we have to wait until it starts trending up to change the way that we evaluate roster talent? Like, how do you take all the information that you have here with the portal, the direction that the people tend to be going into, the fact that there's 500 people, but only a few of them are legitimately bona fide stars or starters, not starters, stars. Like, how does this shift the way that you view how to predict the things that we've been using? Like, has that changed? Because it feels like it's happening a little bit faster. I was like, I thought earlier, I said one day, like 6 months ago with you on this pod, I think, one day recruiting rankings are going to matter less because there's going to be so much movement that it just will be different math.
I think this is really like creeping up on us, right? Is that kind of how you're feeling?
Yeah, I feel like it's like right now.
So it's like I noticed that there was a comment that I heard from a coach or two, and maybe it was said in some press conferences and stuff too. Something that I feel like coaches kind of noticed this season was like you kind of don't really know how much better or worse your opponent has gotten now. Like you kind of, it's hard to, I mean, like we all, you know, we all buy Phil Steele and we all kind of have some idea of who's coming back and who's not and all that kind of
stuff. Or Athlon Sports.
Like, or Athlon Sports. Well, sure. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Cut that. Yeah. Right. Sure. Do what you got to do with that.
I don't work there anymore. It's okay.
But we, you know, like you
I'm a Lindy's guy myself.
I was a sporting news
the best decision we ever made at Athlon was not having Ari as our freelancer.
I did the freelancer for Ohio State for Lindy's.
Did you? Yeah. That's good. I think that so like
yeah, some schools, coach said that publicly. It might have been in one of our state of the programs. Just like I don't know how good these teams are.
You just don't know how much better other people have gotten. And like you look at what TCU did this year, for example. Like TCU found a starting linebacker from Navy. Like I didn't even know guys in the Navy could transfer, right? And you've got they found a D lineman from
it's the not FCS like the level. Firm where you can't leave.
I thought you had a
no. If you finish up, you have a commitment.
Oh, so you can drop at any point.
Well, yeah, right. you can transfer out.
I truly don't know the rules around
this. I would transfer out.
First of all, they wouldn't take you there, and then you wouldn't go there.
I had a cousin who transferred.
You'd make it through the first training camp there. You think?
I don't think I would make it past the first hour.
You know what they say is like practice for is the easiest part of their day there too.
It's like you're like, true. Yeah, like okay, crawling through barbed wire and stuff, and then you're looking forward to getting pounded in the head. Like that.
Max is making the great point. Like if you're Kansas State and you're evaluating TCU, like you don't know about this.
So like,
how good this Navy linebacker is going to be?
Right. They took a linebacker from Navy. They took a D lineman from UConn. They took a D lineman from SFA. They took a corner, like an all conference corner from Louisiana Monroe, like in the middle of the summer. So it's like some of this stuff you're just sort of like, oh, where'd this guy come from? Like, there's just a lot of that when you're breaking down the tape. It's not just the progression of, oh, this is a really veteran team. We've seen these guys for 3 years and stuff. And, like, I think that's I was looking at the all Pac-12 list this morning, and, like, there's 12 transfers on it, you know? And so it's like there's some of these guys are players that came from, like, the Mountain West and moved up and were automatically, like, some of the best players in the Pac-12, you know? And so that's that within like the whole ecosystem of how this goes. Yeah. Most of them go down, but we also have guys who are coming up and you're sort of like, where did they come from? And
yeah, like you Jacob Cowing, like, right. From Arizona, who came from UTEP is like one of the best receivers in the conference. Yeah,
for sure. And you're seeing like, oh wow, that production they had at the G5 level actually really does translate at the Power 5 level. And so like, you're seeing, they're not just like meeting their needs, but then like you're playing this team and you're like, wait, they're better than they're supposed to be, you know? Like, okay. So it's that part, like in terms of like, so then how does that play into, you know, the team talent composite and stuff like that? Like, obviously that stuff needs to kind of iterate a little bit to account for that.
And you got
to
take it a step further, guys, too, of just like in the college football playoff selection this year, you had four choices. You probably didn't feel that great about 3 and 4, or you had some people who didn't feel great about one or the other or both, mm-hmm. but there was nobody else to put in. And I wonder if teams being better than they were in the past lend to more upsets, which leads to a less defined 4-team field. Now, that's going to change in a year from now, but I'm wondering if going undefeated is just more difficult than it used to be as a result of this.
Probably so, and probably maybe one thing that on paper we underestimate, and this we're going to find out here in a couple of years, is what if the like 5 through 12, those teams are more competitive with each other than you think? In the playoff.
Yeah, I'm trying to think kind of your point about upsets. Let's go real quick. Let's go league by league. Like Colorado was just awful. But like in the ACC, the two teams that we thought were going to be the worst, Duke and Georgia Tech, actually won a bunch of games. Virginia Tech wasn't good. In the SEC, Vanderbilt was probably the worst team, won 2 league games. In the Big Ten, I mean, Northwestern was bad. They made, I don't know if it made Ohio State sweat. I don't know if this is different than any other year, but that's kind of the point is like, if some of these quote unquote bad teams are able to plug some holes in the offseason and get a little bit better, then that maybe that leads to more upsets.
And conversely, like you could go through those standings and say, are there some, you know, 6-6 and 5-7 teams that either missed on transfers or didn't take enough transfers?
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
So I quick exercise here, guys. Four college football playoff teams. Let's rank them from portal impact. So I think it's clear to say Georgia had the least portal impact and TCU had the most. And then Georgia and Michigan. Yeah. I mean, Michigan, Ohio State had some defensive backs. Ari, I don't think anyone really.
Ohio State got one starter, Tanner McAllister.
Yeah. I think Olu on the O-line is probably more impactful.
Michigan
for
Michigan. Too.
Michigan. My point kind of three of the four teams, though, really did not lean into the portal.
But I mean,
but Michigan played a big hole, you know.
But obviously, if USC makes the four, if they win their game and they make it, then everyone is saying,
and without the portal, they would never even close.
Right.
100%. Yeah. How do you go from 4-8 to that? I mean, that's how they did it.
I just don't know how regular, and maybe it will be, Max. You tell me. Getting a guy like Caleb Williams or a Justin Fields, for instance, out of the portal is going to be. Is it going to be way more common than we think, or were those just two extenuating circumstances?
I think the Caleb Williams one is going to be pretty rare. I think. I mean, unless this thing is just going to be like completely dictated by collectives in the years ahead, and it's just people like you saw. I'm guessing you guys saw the comment from Dave Clawson saying like, well, if Sam Hartman gets like life changing money, then he should go do it, right? Like, I think that maybe we are going to head in that direction. And there are some of these guys that you hear, you know, like Drake May and stuff, who you know people will pay a lot of money for. Like, are they going to start, even if you're happy at North Carolina, if someone makes this crazy, crazy offer to you, are those guys maybe more compelled to move on? I guess we'll see on that part. But yeah, the Caleb Williams is like, you wouldn't point to Caleb Williams and be like, this is the model for how to do it, because you can't possibly get that lucky.
But this will be the fourth time in 7 years that there's been a transfer quarterback win a Heisman. So they're out.
Because they're always the same person. They all play for the same guy.
Yeah. I have two trivia questions. My other trivia question is pretty good.
That there is going to be opportunity for legit players, like more like Justin Fields and less like Caleb Williams. Because Caleb Williams is a bona fide star already. Like, even though we only saw half a season from him, we knew what that was going to turn into. With Justin Fields, he didn't play all that much. There was concerns about his character and attitude when he came. I don't know if those are even real, but that's what people were saying. And like, but what about all the classes, like Alabama's class this year, who have two top 50 quarterbacks in it? Like, one of them is going to be available eventually, and it's going to be quicker than it probably would have been in the past. So,
let's take that example of whether it's like Devin Leary, or if we want to go all the way to like a really top shelf guy, like a Drake May or whatever. Like, how do you look at that, Ari, where it's like, okay, I hear good things about Devin Brown, for example, right? Like, I think that's probably, that guy has a chance to really be a really good successor. Obviously he's got to compete with McCord. Alabama's got a couple of guys, like you said, Georgia's got a couple of guys who will compete for it next year, who are all top recruits. Right. So it's like, how do you kind of balance that deal right now in December, when you have to kind of make these decisions now with these guys that either are on the market or could, you know, you could talk them into being on the market, basically? Like, how do you make the decision of, we're going to go get this guy who we think makes us better, knowing that we're going to lose two guys out of our room?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's the whole thing with how to balance that roster. I mean, the thing that was so interesting about, even with the Ohio State example that you just used, is that you have to make a decision based on, you know, what could happen as a result of that decision. So it's not just the calculus of who's the best now. It used to just be who's the best, put them on the field, and let's go. Now it's who's going to help us win the most without decimating the entire room. And like, that's a very uncomfortable situation. And I think what's going to happen is that You know, on one hand, it might be easier to sign two guys in the same class than it used to be because there's really no consequences for taking your shot out of high school. But on the other hand, you know, every time you make a decision on a starter who has more than 1 year of eligibility, why would anybody stay? Nobody wants to wait around and do anything. So I don't know. I think the hardest
part. But then, like, if a Ty Simpson or a Devin Brown or whatever hits the portal, then, like, they're going to have a ton of interest too, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean, like, it wouldn't be a reflection that they can't play at that level. It's just somebody right. thinking they can do one better.
Well, it might be if the coach, if Nick Saban takes a transfer, then it's maybe it is an indication that he doesn't think Ty Simpson
or Milroe or.
Yeah, or Milroe. Yeah. So I want to.
But you don't ever. You the one thing before, because I want to go down that road a little bit more. Sometimes you might have good players on your team and still take a transfer. Is that mm-hmm. is that what you're getting at? Like, yep. like, what if Ohio State took Ty Simpson? Like, that could happen. Like, those are the types of things that, yep. you know, because if Ryan Day is evaluating is – now, the hardest part to me is how do – like, a guy like Kyle McCord, for instance, who we've seen some of, but we haven't seen for an entire season. Like, what is – how do you evaluate that properly? How do you evaluate Devin Brown in the event that he were to go? Like, there's going to be a lot of top 50 players who hit the portal that haven't played that much, and it's going to kind of be a mystery, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, what do we know about Quinn Ewers off two handoffs at Ohio State? You know, like it's
they're a great handoffs, though.
So, what do you think?
They're the most perfect handoffs I've ever seen in my life.
I know. Yeah. It's a 1.0, damn it. So, you know, I think it's.
What's crazy is I don't know how much we know about Ewers now.
No, it's true. It's true. We're going to get derailed if we even go any further on
Quinn Ewers. Yeah. You said Quinn Ewers, my antennas went up. Sorry.
It's your shut up. But it's like, so how do you like, you know, if you're like, let's take the Georgia example, right? Like, okay, does Devin Leary make you a lot better next year than one of your young guys that's been with Monken for a couple of years? You know, like it's just hard yeah. to make.
Right.
And these are the decisions you can't sit around for a month and think about necessarily, right? It's a pretty like these recruitments are 2 week deals now, you know, and the thing that you saw that actually worked out, which is hard to pull off these days, is what K-State did. Because they brought in Martinez feeling like he was the missing piece in terms of making a Big 12 title run. But Will Howard didn't leave, and the other guys didn't leave. And so
– was he the best backup quarterback in the country this year?
Was he the best backup quarterback in
Will
the
country? Will Howard, most productive.
I mean, he won a conference championship game. So, I mean
maybe the most
– I mean, he's no Drew Aller, but he's pretty good. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's no Cade Klubnik. But
you're really playing the hits right now, bud.
Yeah. So it's like you have to somehow if you're Ryan Day or Kirby Smart or whoever, like somehow you have to massage that enough where you have the right competitive culture that guys are going to stay and believe like, okay, well, maybe Adrian Martinez is going to be the guy for this season, but I'm still going to be the guy next year. And I may, you know, bet on myself and play plenty this year. So like, you got to stick it out. Like that's the next step of it is like, how do you just not have your room constantly kind of be a revolving door every few years?
Well, let's back up 2 years ago, Ari, and you know, I used to listen to you and Landis all the time talk Thank about you. In the offseason.
No, I missed that show.
We think CJ Stroud's the guy. We're not sure. Like, what if the portal were open then and Ryan Day had to make the decision, do I go with this CJ Stroud guy who we think's really good or do I get a veteran? Well, Stroud turned out to be a really good quarterback for them for 2 years.
Well, yeah. I think that one of the first things that Ryan did as a head coach at Ohio State was go get Justin Fields. And there were mm-hmm. two players in the quarterback room. One was the great Tate Martell, who thought that they had a shot to win.
Well, we talked Tate Martell. We've talked Quinn Ewers. Man. I mean, this
whoever's got their bingo board at home is loving this.
Yeah, well, you should just throw an SEO.
Borderline erotic.
This is an SEO yeah, dream. People are still Googling Tate Martell, right?
Should they fire Ryan Day? Keep going.
But like then they brought – it's a kind of a ruthless move to have guys in your program for 2 or 3 years working their asses off, trying to develop, and then when it's their time, then – going over the top to go get somebody else. So there's two ways of looking at it. Like if you were a high school quarterback, like what would you do? Would you go try to go to Alabama, Georgia, or Ohio State and bide your time and hope things work out for you? Or would you just go play at ASU or U of A or UCLA or something your freshman year, a place that you're automatically going to play for? And if things go well, then you can transfer up to those places once you're a bona fide star.
Austin Novosad is the perfect example. Like, now, Baylor's a really good program, but he mm-hmm. Austin Novosad, who literally chose between Ohio State and Baylor.
I mean, I really don't know. I think the upside of what you have to gain by going to those places out of high school is diminishing if – you know, good players are going to hit the portal more often and they're going to take those players. Now,
I think you're right that path to playing time has to be moving up the list here of priorities for those guys.
And path to playing time might be path to playing time at Alabama. You could theoretically, and maybe Alabama and Georgia aren't the right ones because in Ohio State, because they already have really good players in their team and they're less likely to have a need. But path to playing time where your second recruitment is you as a bona fide starter might be faster by going to a place that's a fun and gun offense, right?
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I agree. If you're a high-end four-star prospect, why wouldn't you go play for Kenny Dillingham at ASU right now?
Well, why wouldn't anyone go play for Kenny Dillingham?
No, I'm just saying, like, go and throw the ball around for a year and a half, 2 years, enjoy yourself, and then when you want to go win a national championship, pick which one of the five teams that needs a quarterback is in the portal and go. Like, I mean, I don't know.
It's not a bad way to go. I mean, I think that is probably going to start factoring into
the backup quarterback thing could be dead.
Well, I mean, and you're seeing these G5 guys that, like, these all-conference G5 players, like from the MAC and other leagues that are going into the portal. Like, maybe that is how they looked at it. Maybe they thought, I'm going to go here somewhere. I'm going to put some good stuff on tape and hopefully play really well and play right away. And then we're going to move up.
All right, let's transition to a little recruiting talk because this is Stars Matter. Deion Sanders goes to Colorado. Sunday, the day it's announced, Colorado's recruiting class in the 247 composite ranked 41 with 20 commits, average player rating of 85.76. So again, they're ranked 41st. What will their recruiting class be ranked on February 2nd? Ari, I'll start with you.
22.
Max.
A bunch of guys just committed in the portal. Say it again to me. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. What will Colorado's recruiting class was 41st in the 247 composite when Deion got the job on Sunday. What will it be ranked on February 2nd, the end of whenever the February signing period?
We factoring in transfers or just high
school? No, just recruiting class.
Just recruiting class.
Yes.
I'd say I would say low 20s. I'd say like 20, 28.
Yeah, I would say in there. One thing, and, you know, obviously I'm not a kid making that decision, but they have to weigh. Like, playing for Deion's great, and it's got to be so attractive, but they were awful last year. I mean, this mm-hmm. team is – I don't care how many guys they bring in. This isn't a USC 4-8 to conference. Yeah. This is maybe 6-6 at best, I think.
You don't care who they bring in? What if they bring in, like, 25 dudes?
They're not – I don't. My point is, I don't think they're going to bring in enough players to be like a 8-9-10 win season. I can be completely wrong, but it was the worst Power Five team in the country that these guys would be joining.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Do you guys think that a lot, like, so obviously, like, the Travis Hunter thing is super difficult to pull off and super impressive. Do you think that he can really, like, go out and get like 8 to 10? 4-star better players in this class?
I don't know about this class. I'd say next year.
I think next year probably, that's the
expectation.
Yeah.
Because, like, if Deion can't do that, then it's a failure. Like, that's the whole reason he was hired, right? He wasn't hired because he's Bill Parcells. He was hired because he was going to be able to attract talent. Now, maybe that talent is more attractive. Like, do you think, like, a portal guy would be more attracted to that situation than, say, a high school player would be?
I think he can clean up in the portal right now, and then that next class would be – You would hope that's the one where they're really surprising some people with the caliber of and I know he had a few more than just Travis Hunter last year, right? I don't mean to diminish it, but I would think this close to early signing period, probably hard to flip a lot of those guys, right?
Like, I wonder if, like, there is a world where he signs 4 or 5-star prospects next year. Like, is that possible?
Yeah.
Colorado, I know we're going way back. They won a national championship. I'm older than you guys, obviously. I remember when Colorado was damn good for 10, 15 years.
I think when Colorado was good.
I can assure you, these recruits do not remember that whatsoever.
I was going to say, had the parents of these recruits even met yet when that was going on?
That's right.
Let's see. I met my wife in 96.
Cordell Stewart was awesome, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these guys can't even remember Auburn winning the national championship, let alone –
I don't think recruits today know that Joel Klatt played for Colorado.
I didn't even know that.
There you go. There you go.
It's sort of like the perfect school for this case study too. Like, it's not Washington State where it's out in the middle of nowhere and it's going to have trouble. Like, you can get kids to Colorado. You know, they, back in my day when they used to recruit LA, they, Southern California, that was their pipeline there. And they won a national championship. So, I mean, I think
the school could be located anywhere. It's just a matter of whether or not people want to play for him. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I think is the most interesting about this, guys, and then we can move on to other things because Deion can't be the whole show, but We just got done making fun of Mitch for, you know, bringing up when
being seasoned. Don't Colorado say Colorado was awesome. Seasoned veteran.
The one thing I will say about Deion Sanders is that it's not like he's played recently either. And like something about him and his personality has maintained, like, there's no reason why a 15-year-old kid should like be like, oh my God, Deion. Like, when was his last year in the NFL? Like 15, 20 years ago now?
And he hasn't even been on TV. Like, he was on CBS.
He wasn't, like, yeah, like, it's not like he's been years. Like, it's not like he's LeBron, you know? And yeah, the fact that he's been able to maintain his stardom as a result is been kind of interesting to me. And I don't know
if I think the connection to the Under Armour game was probably huge.
Yeah.
I think he's got connections with a lot of kids through that. Now, of course, yeah, he hasn't been doing that, I assume, for the past couple of years. So, you know, you've got to, you know, but I think those ties probably are going to factor into his ability to go get some transfers.
Yeah. Right, I have an idea. Ohio State's too big of a job, but Bowling Green should hire LeBron as head coach when he retires. And he can just recruit kids there and just be like the CEO.
Well, the thing that is so interesting to me, it's like I used to say, like, why the hell would Deion go to Colorado when he could just, like, go to Jackson State, do it again one more year, and then just, like, wait for the perfect spot. Like, if a Florida State were to open, or, you know, a school in the ACC that would recruit those territories that are near some of those big southern cities, like, that would be a pretty good scenario for him. And it's like, well, why would he go to Colorado? I feel like all Deion cared about was it's in a Power 5 conference right now, and it's got, like, above average to average facilities, and, like, I'll take it from here, you know, because, okay, like,
so do you think Deion will be there 3 years from now?
I don't know the answer to that.
I'd say yes, but it's just
there's a negative connotation there.
No. Yeah. I'm saying success or fail. Do you think success, if he's successful in this, will he be at Colorado for year three, year four?
If he's successful enough to sign, like, let's just say the thing that we just came up with of four or five five-star prospects in a single class is true. Like, what's the point of leaving?
Like, because everybody, they'll just go with you.
No, but I'm saying, other than the salary, which would increase, and, you know, I'm not going to act like he doesn't care about that. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the point of going to a higher profile place?
You're saying if you can get them anywhere,
why start over? Yeah. Like, what's the point? Unless you think it'd be easier to get them at Auburn, or
it'd just be an NIL thing, I suppose, right?
Yeah. So I don't know. If
Mike Norvell were 4-8 this year, I'd say there's a more likely chance of him leaving. But yeah, you know, to Ari's point, if you get it rolling at Colorado, and then you really get it rolling, and the NIL support is there.
I mean, if you get it rolling at Colorado,
you're going to predict that he's going to fail there. I'm just saying, like, he might just view this like he did Jackson State, as potentially this is just a 2-year plan to go to something bigger.
Yeah, I mean, if he's successful there, he's a candidate for any job in America at that point, right? Like, you hand him the keys to the car at a Power 5, like, juggernaut.
I suppose so, yeah.
If you can build Colorado, like, that's an impossible thing to do. And, like, I actually have a hunch that, like, he's going to do it. If I had to guess, fail or succeed in 3 years.
I'd say succeed.
I'd say succeed.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I'm sure you guys have noticed this. I'm sure you have, Ari. Have you guys noticed that Arizona State is building, like, the GOAT recruiting staff right now?
That's my bullet point on the podcast.
It's on here, right?
It's on my list.
The stuff they're doing right now, like, the stuff that came out yesterday, wowed me. Like, Dillingham is freaking doing it.
Ari was right. I'm complimenting you, Ari.
I know. You didn't want me to write it.
I did not. That is such BS. We're not revisiting. That's revisionist history. Okay. Does Jeff Brohm hold this Louisville class together? And did
I'm scheduled to talk to Ruben Owens' father after the podcast, so I'll let you know after.
Yeah.
I think that Louisville probably had a good idea that Jeff Brohm was very interested and was probably telling recruits as of the week, whenever the Satterfield news broke, or Monday morning, just be patient. We think we've got some good news. We've got a guy who's you're going to want to play for. And now the relationships aren't there. I get that. And most of these kids are from California. They're not in-state kids who drew up dreaming of going to play football at Louisville. So maybe that there's not that attachment, but I think there's a much better chance they can keep it together than if it were just, you know, they were still just interviewing coaches today, obviously.
Yeah. Since I got from talking to people this week, it's a better deal on both sides. You know, I think Louisville, the new staff, will be able to hold this together with Pierce Clarkson and the guys that he's been able to attract and the way they've been able to do things with Steve Clarkson. I think they're going to be able to hold it together.
Yeah.
Now, of course, this is, we always circled this month though as being the, like, all right, like, you know, Ruben Owens, DeAndre Moore, like, are you guys really going to sign there? You know, so like, obviously, if those guys are taking visits, you wouldn't be that surprised or anything like that. But yeah, I don't think that. Let's just say I don't think that that whole deal was tied to Scott Satterfield.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, no comments. Just going to giggle.
Well, I said yeah. Okay. That was my comment. What do you want me to say?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Do you think, Max, I don't think we talked about this. The news might have broke afterwards last week. Can Trent Dilfer make UAB a G5 destination?
You're the Nashville expert.
I think he can. I think he'll be a really good recruiter.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Please enlighten us, because you being from Nashville, you have a much better read on this than I do.
Put it this way. A lot of people in Nashville in the high school football industry that are pleased he's no longer in Nashville.
Okay.
Rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Recruited a lot of kids from out of state. Won a lot of games. One of my in the state championship game, I think they were up 42-0 late and could have kneeled on the ball and threw a touchdown pass to go up 49-0. And one of my friends who's got a son who plays high school football tweeted at Lipscomb Football, is Hank Brown's knee hurt? Is that why he couldn't kneel or something like that? And, you know, just kept running up on the way out the door. But he's got a big personality and he was very, you know, the track record isn't great for high school coaches to college football. He's a little bit of a different animal. He's been in the recruiting game with the Elite 11. People know who he is. So I think he'll attract really good offensive players. Hank Brown is his quarterback here who had committed to Liberty, decommitted and lands a UAB offer. I don't know if he's committed yet, but I think he'll get some good offensive players there.
I think that you've been around him a bit at Elite 11, right, Ari?
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's going to be able to build a good staff.
Well, this is what I was just going to say. A lot of times, too, like if you're a recognizable head coach with a name that's going to get people interested, the smartest thing you can do is get people in place that know what they're doing and kind of just serve as like the header to the program. I'm not saying don't do anything. I'm just saying, like, you know, at the first part of it, like your whole thing is being the CEO and acquiring talent through your charisma, but also leaving some of the, you know, nitty gritty details to the guys who have done it before, while you learn on the job. So that seems like it's something that would do pretty good. And like he took it's like much easier probably to make a high school program into a really, really good program after 4 or 5 years. But Lipscomb was trash. And then they like won or played for 3 straight titles in a row and had like 28 Division I players on their team. It's like that's recruiting, kind of, right? I don't know.
Yeah,
yeah, I was going to say, as recruiting Mitch was like describing the stuff he was doing wrong, I was like, it sounds like a college coach to me.
You know? I mean, I went to the high school.
Kids from out of state to play quarterback for you. It works perfectly.
It's national recruiting, but I went and hung out with him at Lipscomb for an hour when I was in Nashville during the symposium. Mm-hmm. And the place was stacked. It looked like a college facility, you know? They had all these, you know, everything that he did there was college-like, so... You know, I don't know if that means that he's going to be good at UAB, but I think that if you have a Super Bowl winning quarterback who seems to be a semi-savvy person,
yeah,
or pretty savvy person, then, you know, I'm all for just trying something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just try. See what happens.
This is a weird statement to make, but Mitch, the only school I've ever visited in the state of Alabama was Troy. So I don't have a whole lot of...
Really?
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of context for where UAB fits into their region and world there.
Well, you got a new stadium. Obviously, Birmingham is a great high school. It's a good football town. It is not the biggest city, but it's 2.5 hours from Nashville. It's 2 hours from Atlanta. You got a really good recruiting. You draw that 300-mile radius or around. There's a lot of players in there. They've won recently, so I think it's a good P5 job. All right, a little research, looked up question for you guys. I think the 247 composite might have changed in the past couple of days because one of the services, maybe Rivals, updated theirs. But as of Monday when I did this, or Sunday, there were 424 blue chippers in the 247 composite. How many do you think remain uncommitted? What percent?
Did you do the percentage or can we just guess a total?
Well, I did the number and the percentage because
okay.
They're not very different. 424.
So how many remain uncommitted?
163.
I'm going to say 80.
56. Okay. How many scores?
Murray's right, though. A lot of them could be flipped. I mean, some of them are soft.
By the way, commitment means it's loose, okay?
Yeah.
Engaged ain't married, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure that went over well when during your engagement, Max.
I think Michael Scott said that.
How many schools do you think have none? How many Power Fives have no blue chippers committed?
No blue chippers committed.
Have you seen Vegas Vacation?
30.
30?
What, you think more than half? Or basically half.
I was going to say like 14 or something.
Ari, trust your gut.
To 20?
15.
16.
16?
All right. Yeah. And one of them, Arizona State, I'd imagine they'll flip someone. That's one of them.
Bet your ass they will.
Okay, I'll go real quick. Arizona State, Boston College, Cal.
Look, Ari's been telling us for years that all these players are only going to 8 schools, so that messed up my math. You know?
Here's another
one. Blue chips, it goes way down the list, though. That's why.
That's true.
Here's another one. Colorado doesn't have one right now either, although they did get a 24 kid. Colorado, Boston College, Cal, Duke, Georgia Tech, Indiana, Kansas, Maryland, Oklahoma State, Pitt, Rutgers, Syracuse, Virginia, Washington State, Wisconsin. I want to move on, but this is your neck of the woods. What's going on? Anything going on in Oklahoma State, Max? Just seems like kind of like a lot of portal activity. And that's one of those schools that, correct me if I'm wrong, is losing some guys that they don't want to lose.
They are losing some starters. We can at least say that.
Yeah.
They're losing some starters. Spencer Sanders moving on. Dominic Richardson. Trace Ford, a bunch of guys that have played a lot there. You know, it was a disappointing year at Oklahoma State. You know, they certainly felt like they had a chance to be in the mix for the Big 12 title again this year and believe went 6-6. So frustrating year. The quarterback situation there is real up in the air here because, when Sanders was hurt this season, they played Garrett Ringel and they played Mike Gundy's son, and they're bringing in Zane Flores from Nebraska.
Yeah, any Zane Flores, is that door shut for Nebraska?
Zane Flores seems like he's not entertaining Nebraska.
No, okay.
I think he's pretty solid about going to Stillwater in January. But that's one of those schools where you're saying like, okay, are they going to call Hudson Card or what transfer quarterback are they going to go after? But that's certainly one of those that they're going to have to fill some needs here. You know, obviously they lost some big names like Tanner McAllister we mentioned earlier and Jarek Bernard Converse and some good players out of the portal last year. They're losing Mason Cobb too, who I really love as one of their best defenders. He's going to end up somewhere good. So definitely one of those that I'm curious to see if there's some staff changes after a disappointing season. And I'm curious to see just how much they hit the portal versus trusting. That's one of those places that they trust their culture and development and feeling like they can plug in the next guy and next man up, but that's not really how it played out this season.
Is this, it's very early in the portal, but are they on the early list of top of the losers of the portal? Is it fair to say too early?
Early. I mean, yeah, just because nobody's made commitments and stuff right now so far. But yeah, they've been one that the Spencer Sanders moving on didn't surprise me. There've been some rumors about that for a few weeks now. And he's one of those guys, like I mentioned Martinez earlier, where he played 4 years, one place because of the COVID year, you got an extra year, may as well use it somewhere else. As opposed to going pro, but that's one that their roster probably gonna, their lineup's gonna look probably a little bit different next year.
All right, are you ready for the player of the week?
Yeah, did you went in a different order. Did you already do trivia this week?
Trivia's at the end. I don't know if you ever listened to the podcast.
Well, you asked us three trivia questions, so sorry for being confused.
Yeah, but I have the official trivia is at the end.
Okay,
wait, before we get to that stuff though, all right, do you have you gonna give us any Vegas stories? I mean, I know about the Scorpion.
I didn't go wild.
So I almost got
in bed by 11 every night.
So just, I'm
just sports book start to finish. That's it.
Yeah. Sports book from start to finish. I had a rough go of it at the video poker machines a few times, but when we went to a really nice dinner the last night I was in, but it wasn't like an old Vegas trip for me. It was I'm a father, and the most thing that I'm looking forward to right now is going into a freezing cold hotel room where I can sleep for 8 hours without being bothered by anybody. And I got to tell you, that was really awesome.
So at 2 a.m. and 3 a.m., you are dead asleep.
Yeah. There was like, and there's nobody, for us, the phone's on silent.
So Max, on Friday, I go to a, go out to lunch by myself. Very rare. Usually eat at home, but Friday, just local coffee shop, sitting down, got my laptop open. I get a FaceTime call. It's our buddy Ari and Antonio. And Ari, so it's not on my phone FaceTime. I put it on my laptop screen. It's Ari, and he's not wearing a shirt. So, like, I'm in the middle of this coffee shop, and people are walking by, and there's this huge hairy bear on my screen. I was like, I'm going to get kicked out of this place.
I'm a huge hairy bear.
You're a hairy guy, right?
I mean, we don't have to classify him right now. We can keep going with the story. Yeah.
So that's my Ari in Vegas experience. And so I quickly shut my laptop and went to the phone off.
Is the stadium sick? Is it pretty cool?
Yeah. It's like Jerry World, but like a step further, you know?
Okay.
It's like Jerry World, like, is the, I feel like, the stadium that started all this. And now it's just like, yeah, it's really cool.
What's its seat?
70, the press 80? Box is really, really high, though. Okay. Like, I felt like I was like looking down at the field. They were like ants down there. But,
is that like a monster video board? I know we're getting way far off.
No.
Is it a monster video board thing like Dallas or no?
No. But there are video boards around it and stuff, and the suites seem really cool. You know, they've got like a lot of like field level suites with couches and stuff. And like I was just telling Andy during the show or during the game, that was like, you know, they announced the attendance was like 65,000. But like the actual building is, I feel like, twice as big as like, oh, really? Bryant Denny or Ohio Stadium. And I think part of the reason why is, or the big house is, they actually have like chairs with backs and armrests. Whereas in those places there's benches, but like the building is massive.
Sweet.
But yeah, you got to get out there. Maybe me and you will just go and by ourselves and like we'll get adjoining rooms.
Dad's weekend off.
And all we'll do is eat nice dinners and go to bed at 9. It's like every woman's nightmares when their husband goes to Vegas. And for me, it's just like, I'm going to get a massage, go to 2 nice meals, and I'll be in bed by 9 o'clock.
But this would be like the kind of one where, since Andy's not there, you and I are not starting the day by being like, should we work out this morning? You know, I'd just be like, nah.
Andy's like, hey, do you want to go climb the Hoover Dam with your bare hands and feet right now, or do you want to sleep in for the next hour?
Getting up at 9, and we are not working out that day.
He woke up at 6 a.m. Yeah. He looks good. So, I mean, all the credit in the world to him. But, you know, I feel like no matter how fit I ever got, Vegas would not be the place.
No, for sure.
just read the room, you know?
Yeah. Make up for it at home.
Just like, you know, you go there with the mindset that it's going to be a setback, a little setback, and then you'll be fine.
All right. Player of the week. Usually an off-the-radar player where we revisit, like where'd this guy come from? Oh, he was the number 1600 recruit. But we're going Max Duggan here. Ari, what do you think Max Duggan's 247 composite rating was coming out of high school?
Wasn't he Council in the 400s or something?
Council Bluffs, which is right over the river from Omaha here.
I've stayed there several times in Council
Bluffs. Oh, he's like 250, 275-ish?
Max, do you know? You probably know. Closer.
Max Duggan, I actually do know this. He was – in fact, Ari, I think he was at the Elite 11 that you and I were both at in Frisco.
Yeah.
He was in Frisco.
I think that's why my guess was in the top 300. Am I off?
No, you're 229. And
I don't know. He's like 10th in his class.
I mean, I don't know if they were all committable, but offers from Georgia, Ohio State, you know, is 247 combined. So he was big time. You know, he was legit.
That was a great one by Sonny Cumbie. He built a great relationship on that one. Mike Riley, when they were at Nebraska, those guys were recruiting him, but Cumbie came in and really won him over. Credit to him.
All right, ready for a little trivia? This is the official trivia question, Ari.
Okay.
All right.
I'm so bad at this, Mac, so maybe you'll lead the way for us.
Okay. Two-parter.
Yep.
Of the 65 Power 5 coaches, current. Like, so if you got fired, you're not part of this. If you got hired, you're part of it. How many of the 65 coaches transferred while they were in college? And I'm not...
How long did this take you to look up?
You let me worry about that, Ari, okay?
That's why it takes so long for my stories to get online.
What are you talking about? I am at your service. I spent half my life working around your schedule, Ari. It didn't take that long.
He's like Googling like 1980s media guides to try to figure out.
All I did was go team by team and say, okay, Lincoln Riley, put him in Wikipedia. Where do you go to college? It says where you go to college, all that. It took me 20 minutes. Yeah. Okay. So not two coaches went to junior college and then transferred to, I'm talking about 4-year school to 4-year school. So the first part of the question is how many transferred, but the real question is only one transferred from a 4-year Division I school to another FBS school to FBS school. So only one P5 coach was like a legit FBS to FBS transfer when he was in college.
Well, what? So first of all, I don't know where he's going with this. We did lose a few this offseason. I'm going to point that out. So we lost Scott Frost, went from Stanford to Nebraska.
Scott Frost would have been on it.
Would have been on the list. I believe Herm Edwards was also a transfer back in the day.
Michigan State? No. Where'd he go? Fresno State, right?
No idea.
I think Fresno State, but he's not on
State,
it.
Okay. Something like that. Yeah.
Ari just has this look of confusion.
Because the thing that you said to clarify it makes no sense to me. I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, the only one of these eight guys. Okay, so
one of these eight guys.
Oh shit! I said the answer. Okay, so eight.
That was Stars Matter. We'll get you back.
Ari, that's your new deal. You're gonna act really confused to confuse me. So like
you flustered him into giving away.
Brent Nye transferred from Maryville to Buffalo when Buffalo was a Division III school. So there's one guy who's transferred from Division I to Division I, FBS to FBS. I will say I posed this to Eric Single and Matt Brown, and Matt got it.
Of course he did.
I'll
give you the guys who are on this list.
Why don't you give us a conference?
Okay, well, hold on. Pat Narduzzi transferred from Youngstown State to Rhode Island. Brent Pry from Maryville to Buffalo. Matt Campbell from Pitt to Mount Union.
Yep.
Neil Brown from Kentucky to UMass when UMass was FCS.
Whipple, yeah.
Clark Lee from Samford to Belmont to Vanderbilt. Josh Heupel from Weber State to, was it Snow Junior College? Wherever he went, to Oklahoma. Jimbo Fisher from Salem College to Samford. So there's one who went from current SEC school to current ACC school.
No, I'm saying what conference is the coach in?
ACC.
ACC coach transfer?
Yeah.
It's the best I could do to narrow it down, Ari.
I have no idea. So like,
Dino Babers?
No. Dino went somewhere interesting. I was surprised. Like, good for you, Dino. I forgot, though. I didn't write him all down.
Okay. Wasn't that good.
I was just surprised that Dino, you know, I don't know. I didn't know where he's from. But
Okay, I'm just going to.
Mac Brown? No.
Mike Elko?
Oh, Dino went to Hawaii.
Dino went to Hawaii? Oh, nice. Yeah.
Mike Elko?
Nope. Elko might have gone Ivy League. Some smart coach. Dave Clawson went to Williams.
All right, what's the answer, Mitch? I mean, I'm at the end of my pathetic rope here.
Mac Brown.
Mac Brown. Said.
Okay.
Right. All well, right. It was sort of like just talking through. That wasn't an answer.
Uh-huh. No, you're right. I did soft play it there.
Vanderbilt to Florida State.
Vanderbilt to Florida State.
So
Mac Brown.
There you go.
What year was that?
What?
What year did that happen in?
68. I think it was 70s. Early 70s.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. He went to these like campus libraries and he looked up like the 1968 media guides. And
did any of your research involve a leather-bound book?
It's Wikipedia. Ari, it took me 3 hours to research this.
It would take me like 3 hours to do that. I'm a terrible researcher.
You have your strengths, Ari.
Yeah. Getting emails and researching are not the
thing. You have a lot of strengths. Yes. Ari's not familiar with the way email works, but other than that, he's great.
How many unread emails do you have, Ari?
I read all of them. I mean, I just like it's,
no, you
it's
open not so them, much you don't read them.
It's not so much the receiving of the email, it's the retaining of the information of the emails.
I see.
He knows how to make the reservation.
Yeah, I have 60,000 unread emails.
That would stress me out. It stresses me out, so I clear zero. Them.
Yes. Okay. You guys both clear them.
Yeah.
Mitch always is like, "Hey, did you get that email from insert editor here?" I'm like, I get like 900 emails a day. I don't know what you're talking about.
He's like, Max, I'll send him a text.
Do you know how many gambling sites email him every day, Mitch? Like,
I know it is. I got one right now from a gambling site.
I'll text him, "Did you do this yet?" He goes, "I don't know what that means." It's like, go check your email.
Did you do the blurbs that somebody assigned you 3 months ago that are due today? I'm like, I have no idea. I have no idea what you're talking about. So, and then I've got to do them in a frantic panic, and then they're finished.
Done. It always works out for Ari. It always works out for Ari. So, all right. Ari, you want to do your thing?
Thanks, Mitt.
What?
Thanks, Max. I appreciate you coming on, man. Always love talking to you about this stuff. And Mitch gets all the credit for having you on, but I like to, you know, think it's kind of my idea.
Yeah, it's no credit. This is very timely, Max. How about a little tease, Max? What story are you working on that will be on The Athletic soon? I think it'll be a good read. True freshman, that's my hint.
The oral history of Mac Brown's transfer.
I got a lot of work to do. Let me clarify. Freshman All-America team will be out Thursday.
Is it a true freshman All-American team or just freshman?
There's been some debate about this. Okay. We included redshirt freshmen. I've been doing that in the years past. Do you guys think I should change it to true freshman?
I like true freshman. That's what I would want to read. But
that's kind of what everybody else is doing now. And Ari, I don't know if you've ever gotten a text from Ralph Russo about your work or anything.
But that every was, that 5 was minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's like the one person who has directly said to me, you need to stop doing that. And I would love to, if people could tweet me what they prefer. Like, I don't know. Like, should it just be true freshman?
Would it be a deep list if it was just true freshman?
It's harder.
Would it be easier to, but now that you have it all compiled, if it's running tomorrow, like, would it be a hard thing or an easy thing to do?
Wouldn't make a big difference. I mean, we got Drake May as the quarterback on this team. You can't do that on a true freshman list, obviously. You know, there's a decent balance of freshmen and redshirt freshmen, but I don't know.
I want you to do your fourth year sophomore COVID team.
Dude, that's the thing that's hard. Like, there's a bunch of these. There's a bunch of fake third year freshmen out here who are third year. Yeah, that's the thing. SIDs need to figure it out.
Yeah, they need to chill. There's no such thing as a third year freshman. I don't.
So we got that, and then on Friday we'll have the 2022 All Portal team.
Nice. Look forward to it,
dude. That's incredible.
We're trying to survive here.
Yeah, you're doing a great job.
I think hopefully soon after that we'll be able to do. Best available for the portal. We got that's
best available for the portals going over the fences, I think. So we'll, you know,
that will be well read.
Gotta get
to
it.
Consumed.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited to see how this all plays out. And, you know, as always, you've been like a right hand man with, you know, helping me navigate the what's to come discussion. So I appreciate it, Mitch. Thanks so much for setting it up. And guys, that was another episode of Stars Matter. We got National Signing Day, or the beginning of the early signing period, 2 weeks from today. So buckle your seatbelts and, you know, there's another reason for me not to sleep. We'll catch you guys next week.